Bugle, audio newspaper for a visual world.
Hello, Buglers, and welcome to Bugle issue 140 for the week beginning Monday, the 17th of January, 2011. The last ever Bugle whose numbers you could score at darts without hitting three trebles or a combination of trebles and bullseyes. Breathe it in. Can you taste it, Buglers? That is the taste of history in the baking. I'm Andy Zaltzman, and I'm over here in London in a chair. And joining me this week, a man who's very much a Bugle favourite, easily one of the best guests we've ever had on the show, live in the city where you can wake up in the morning as a dog and go to bed at night as a rhinoceros. Amazing place, New York. It's John Oliver!
Hello, Andy! Hello, Buglers! And welcome back, Chris!
Hello!
Hello, Chris. Chris,
it's been a while, eh?
If you've not been following, Chris has been in Australia watching England beat the Aussies so badly in the cricket that it bordered on a human rights abuse. In fact, I'm surprised that the England cricket team weren't taken straight to The Hague, because they were bowling like they were trying to get information out of the Aussie batters about imminent terrorist attacks. If the only way to get that information was to trap them LBW with a bit of reverse swing.
The Australian batsmen were batting as if they were pretty willing to give that information up pretty fast.
How has it been the right way up again, Chris?
You know what? I have to say, it's not great. I can see why people move there.
Right.
I mean, whilst they don't have anything between, like, the three or four towns or cities that they have there.
Yeah.
It was nice weather. And the people were so astonished to see someone of culture like myself that I was treated like a king and offered land, you know.
My name is Chris, and I've come to educate you savages in the ways of literature. So, Northern Hemisphere, Chris. I know it might be more pleasant, better standard of living and a happier place down there, but Northern Hemisphere, Chris.
I'm enjoying the mood that I'm developing since I've been back. I've been quite resoundingly say f*** you to the pair of you. It's good to be
there
back.
There you go. There you go.
So this is for the week beginning Monday, the 17th of January, meaning as you listen to this, it is 99 years to the minute since these words were spoken for the first time in human history. Oh, the little f***ing Norwegian f***ing bollocks. That's right, it was on this day in 1912 that Captain Scott reached the South Pole and discovered that Roald Amundsen had beaten him to it. He continued, "Terribly sorry, chaps, who's for getting a taxi back?"
Welcome back, Chris. Enjoy bleeping that.
And a quick thank you to Buglers came to see my show at the Soho Theatre, either last night as we record, or the even better shows tonight and tomorrow night. Bit rusty, bit out of date, but still awesome, John. Early front runner for Bugle Live Comedy of the Show of the Year, 2011.
Okay.
In fact, it's already won it. It's already won it.
Wow, that is a strong showing.
Yep.
Top story this week. If you're unhappy with the service your government is providing, please call 0800 Go F*** Yourself. Andy, governments around the world this week have been a little shaky, very much like a Polaroid picture. And let's take a look, this Bugle, at some of the wobbliest governments around.
Is it shaky like a Polaroid picture?
Yeah, that's correct, yes. Sudan! Sudan, Andy's. I mean, it's such a strong brand when it comes to human devastation.
Yeah, sure is.
They're up there with the best. Well, that's right. In fact, I truly believe you could say that Sudan and Afghanistan really are the Coke and Pepsi of misery. But now, Sudan, Africa's biggest country and the one that has spent the last couple of decades attempting to become the dictionary definition of the word suffering, is considering splitting in two. Now, why do this? Is it because the country has become such a runaway success that the Monopolies and Mergers Commission have stepped in and told them to break up to encourage competition from other African states? Are they the Microsoft of sub-Saharan Africa? No. In fact, it's very nearly the exact opposite of that. And Andy, you know things must be bad, because their size was one of their main bragging rights, and now it looks like they're about to throw all of that away. Now, we're not the happiest country, nor the most stable, nor the richest, nor the healthiest, nor the safest, but we are the biggest. We're the Big Mac of Africa. And just like the Big Mac, you really don't want to pay too much attention to what's going on inside us.
Yeah, it's been an interesting few decades for Sudan, ever since they kicked us out, basically. pretty much non-stop war, John, since 1955, the first Sudanese civil war. That was 55 to 72, solid 17-year job. Then the second Sudanese civil war, that was 83 to 2005. So that's, you know, I don't know what they did in the 11 years in between. They just sat around twiddling their thumbs thinking, it just doesn't feel right. Who are we? We have no identity without a civil war. And also, that, of course, the Darfur conflict from 2003. So
of course.
At one point, I mean, all of this certainly puts my dispute with the local council in Streatham about the spilt paint on the pavement outside our house into perspective.
But well, no, well, that's still bad. Still bad, Andy. It's not a competition. That was still awful, awful event.
Two civil wars at once. That is impressive multitasking, though, if nothing else. Yep. I mean, I can just about brush my teeth and hum Bon Jovi songs at the same time. That's about it. Two civil wars on the go at the same time. That's an awesome effort. That is an awesome effort.
So this major landmark vote, as you say, was actually conditioned of a 2005 deal to end almost 20 years of brutal conflict between the North and South. And you remember those conflicts. They were those conflicts that the world heroically tried to ignore, even when it seemed almost impossible. There were times when it didn't seem that you could turn a blind eye anymore, Andy, but it just goes to show what the human spirit is capable of when it's really determined not to pay attention to something. And the roots of the Sudanese conflict, just like the roots of so many conflicts in the world, are basically Britain's fault. It all comes back to us. We are the key ingredient in the root of so many recipes for unrest. Like the rest of Africa, Sudan's borders were drawn up by colonial powers with very little regard to cultural realities on the ground. The maps were often drawn by extremely drunk men who accidentally spilled either red wine, moustache wax, or both on the maps, then quickly drew lines around the mess before they missed their grouse shooting appointment.
In fact, well, it's easy to criticise with hindsight, John. But, I mean, have you ever had to draw up a country's borders amidst competing vested interests and a desire not to completely lose face politically? It is a f*** of a lot trickier than it looks.
I would love to, though. I feel like, inherently, my bloodline means that I would like to do it. In fact, you can trace almost any global conflict back to the roots of British imperialism. It's like playing 6 degrees of blame. It all boomerangs back to Blighty.
Yeah, they split. Sudan was made up of the north, mostly Arabic-speaking Muslims, and the south made up of various different ethnic groups, a lot of whom are Christian or follow local traditional religions. And clearly, John, we Brits, we were merely trying to help Sudan diversify, you know, have a thriving, culturally diverse culture, just helping people learn to live together by
melting pot,
forcing them to live together. That's, yes. I mean, what is that? Is that so wrong?
No, it's not wrong at all.
It's basically exactly what we did in Wales, but more so.
It feels so right. There's nothing that feels more right as a British person than when you're just looking over a big map with a pen in your hand and then just start scribbling. There's nothing that feels more natural. So what Sudan must do now is essentially navigate a national divorce. And this will come with all the complexities and the emotional minefields of any divorce, the North and the South, are going to need to divide up their natural resources. They may want to spend, in fact, the next few weeks putting post-it notes on things that they each think are theirs. You know, CDs, books, villages, oil fields, waffle pans, that kind of thing. And they also need to make it very clear to the centre of Sudan that it is not their fault. Now, the North and South still love you very, very much. It's just that we don't want to be together anymore. Well, Maybe they'll have to try to arrange joint custody, where the centre of Sudan is with the South on weekends and holidays, and is with the North the rest of the time.
Well, that is basically happening. It's the region of Abyei is in the middle of Sudan. And how should they mark the South Sudan independence referendum? With an outburst of violence. So
yes.
And they are actually going to have a referendum. They were scheduled to have a referendum to decide whether to join the North or the South, and that has now been postponed indefinitely. So it is basically, they will be basically handing over the people of Abyei a motorway service station on Sunday mornings, week off.
And the context of that is that you might be just knows that the Abyei is an extremely oil-rich area. So that decision of where it's going to go is going to cause a great deal of pain to both the North and the South, who love it so much, Andy, it and its natural resources so deeply. No, I love Abyei so much. I'd miss the little area terribly. The North has been so abusive of him, I'd be frightened to leave them alone together. I really don't think the North is a fit parent for my beautiful, oily boy.
In the South, there's the former rebels have been running the South Sudan since the peace accord of 2005. And they've been accused of, hang on, let's make this a quiz. Have they been accused, these former rebels, of ploughing too much money into the arts? South Sudan now has more fringe theatres than any other country in the world.
It's possible.
Will they be accused of trying to raise living standards of the poor too quickly, causing people to become giddy and overexcited, thus damaging productivity?
That sounds good.
Or C, were they accused of wasting money from South Sudan's lucrative oil fields on military spending? Any guesses?
I'm going to go with A, Andy. Was it the arts funding?
It was not. Sadly not, John. It was C, and today's prize, if you got that answer right, is a numbing sense of the inevitability of life.
Although, wow, that is a punchline, Andy. That is a punchline. Now, the truth is that it's going to be very hard to have anything resembling an amicable divorce when both parties have disputed ownership of massive oil reserves. The most likely outcome is that they both need to hire expensive celebrity divorce lawyers, because both sides have some pretty nasty shit on the other side that neither would like to see come out in court. Do you want me to tell them about that night that you massacred 120,000 villagers? I didn't think so. I'll have the oil field alternate Christmases, shall I?
Well, the good thing is that as a result of this, the Sudan could be off the American list of terrorist states as soon as July. And in an article on Reuters by the world's greatest living journalist, that is, if your only criterion for judging how great journalists are is by how incredible their names are, this article was written by Ophira McDoom. So you can see my point.
Wow.
That's I tell strong
you
what, work,
you,
isn't it?
You really gave that a big build-up, and I was thinking, this can only be a disappointment. And then it was even better than you claimed it would be.
Anyway, Ophira McDoom reported that if the referendum results are accepted peacefully by both sides, then Sudan will be officially moved onto the not-that-naughty-anymore list. Mm-hmm. It's been on the terrorist list since 1993 for harbouring real dickbags like Carlos the Jackal and Osama bin Laden. It could soon follow Libya down that familiar path from nasty terrorists to oil-rich trade partner. And that is a key. It's such a fine line. It is such a fine line.
Another twist to this story is that only southerners are eligible to take part in this poll, which means that the result is almost certain to be in favour of independence. Voting will last for 7 days to allow everyone to vote, and assuming that the verdict is to secede, Africa's newest country will come into being on the 9th of July 2011 and will be the world's 193rd country. We're so tantalisingly close to the 200th country, Andy. It's almost worth destabilising a few more African countries just to go for the record. Ivory Coast looks like it might go any second. Tunisia's wobbling. You know, we might not be that far away.
Yeah, so a new country could come into being. That's, of course, very exciting news for quiz fans, a new capital city to learn. I mean, that's as good as it gets, really. And also, they've held a competition to choose a new national anthem, which is a great idea. I think it might have been good had we done the same here in the UK. Might have got something better than the tuneless dirge about a made-up magician saving a basically pretend woman. And you do have to ask, has God ever actually saved the Queen? There's no evidence that he has.
Never.
I mean, I assume that if he's as fair as he makes out in the Bible, he will judge all instances wherein Her Majesty is in need of saving on a case-by-case basis. I mean, he has done quite a good job at saving her, to be fair, but whether the song's got anything to do with that, we don't know. It certainly did not work for her daddy, the previous king, who popped his golden royal clogs sometime in his 50s, I think. So, it is a great national embarrassment, the British national anthem. Of course, most national anthems are just fairly basic threats to try and kill as many people as possible from other places.
Yeah.
And that might not be ideal for a country emerging from the wreckage of 5 decades of conflict. But, so they got 49 poets to combine to write the lyrics for this song. 49. I didn't know there were 49 poets in the world.
Yeah, I guess they use all of them.
Yeah, they must have just got all poets. Amongst the lyrics in the national anthem are claiming that South Sudan is the origin of world civilization. I think you'll find that was actually Britain. And they also urge peace, liberty and justice to reign forevermore. Well, let's hope so. I mean, to be fair, peace, liberty and justice are quite out of practice in that part of the world. But good luck to them. And they end by saying, Lord bless South Sudan. And then presumably they finish with an action of tapping their watches, saying, go on, Lord, bless South Sudan. Bless it. It's about... fucking time you blessed it.
So they did. It was very intriguing way that they went about it. It was almost in X Factor style that they gave large groups of singers and bands the same lyrics, got them to write an anthem, and then had a live audience vote for the winner. And the bar was not particularly high because this was the old Sudanese national anthem. Let me just bring this up here. This was actually it. Now, while you're listening to this as well, you should know this is not just a terrible version. This is how it was supposed to be played, on a miniature electronic keyboard set to organ mode. The only variable was that you could add a bossa nova beat depending on the occasion.
Is John playing this live?
That was it.
That's awesome. Presumably that was written in order to try and calm down civil wars. You're a bit of silly music in the background. Almost Benny Hill style. Just get everyone to run around with no clothes on instead.
So now they do have their new national anthem, as you say, with inspirational lyrics. I'm guessing this means that they did not go with Sir Mix-a-Lot's entry, Sudan Got Back, and in brackets, in making it clear that by back he meant a long and painful history. So, you know, what will life be like for the new country of South Sudan, or whatever it calls itself? There are also some potential names to consider. One, Turbo Sudan. Two, that country to the east of Chad. Three, Hogwarts. You know, that's popular. And four, George Clooney, as a thank you for all the work he's done there and a way to appear significantly more handsome. But it won't be easy. Now, the new country has hardly any roads and nowhere near enough schools and hospitals for its population of 8 million. They do have a lot of oil fields, so, well, actually, they do have a lot of oil fields. Maybe they should bid to host the next World Cup, Andy. That would certainly put them on the map. In fact, largely thanks to the massive amount of wars they've had over the last 20 years, Southern Sudan will start off life as one of the very poorest nations on the planet. But that's just the kind of story that America loves. Now, the rags to slightly more rag story that captures the hearts of the Western world.
It seems that the referendum lasts a week. A week of voting, and they had to pass a 60% threshold, which has been passed, for it to be valid. And I think this is a great idea to have a very long election and one with a threshold below which the turnout doesn't count, basically. And I think all general elections and presidential elections around the world, they should set a threshold very high, maybe 95%. And until that's passed, then voting just continues indefinitely. And this will still lead to one-day elections because people will just be simply so desperate for the TV coverage to end. So we essentially have the same system, but with a higher turnout. They're visionaries, these people. Visionaries.
Belgium government news now. And Belgium has been governed by a temporary caretaker government since June. Like every caretaker, I imagine it's been stealing from it quietly. And this has set a post-war record for a period without government, so congratulations, Belgium. That world record will be verified after you provided a urine sample to prove that your country was not on performance-enhancing drugs at any point during that time. So it's been a Belgian version of anarchy over there for 6 months, which is essentially like normal Belgian life, with everyone eating slightly more waffles due to nerves. It's a Belgian waffle joke, Andy.
Well, ironically,
they do eat waffles.
Ironically, I'd also written a Belgian waffle joke for this, but I don't know if it's going to work now. You've already done a Belgian waffle joke.
Why don't you do it as well, Andy? Because Personally, I find Belgian waffle jokes abide by the law of increasing returns.
Okay. Well, let's find out. So they have had no government in Belgium for several months now, and everything has basically been fine. So this could be the way forward for all countries. On the other flip side, it is only Belgium. And governing Belgium is basically just a matter of making sure you have a plentiful supply of waffle mixture. Boom!
They do eat waffles, Andy.
Yeah?
They do eat waffles.
And if you are Belgian and you want to complain about us only doing jokes about waffles in the Belgian bit, well, then make your country do something else.
Give us something else other than waffles. Your move, Belgium.
Apart from waffles and horrific predatory paedophiles.
That's right. Be thankful we're focusing on the waffles part.
That's right.
Now, one of Belgium's best-known actors... And you won't have heard of him. That's That's the thing. Benoit Poivre. But for the sake of argument, let's call him Benoit Waffle. One of Belgium's best-known actors, Benoit Waffle, has urged his fellow citizens not to shave again until the country finally forms a new government. And Benoit's statement is important for two reasons. One, we should always listen to actors, Andy. It is important to hear what they have to say. Who could possibly know more about science, for instance, than an actor who is promoting a movie in which they pretend to be a scientist? That's an unprecedented level of expertise. But secondly, because this is also a phenomenal idea. Benoit Waffle said, we have decided to stop shaving for as long as Belgium has no government. Let's keep our beards until Belgium rises again. My only criticism here would be that Benoit Waffle does not go far enough. Women and children should get involved too, and all wear stick-on beards. Not only will that make that compelling image attract global attention to the Belgians' plight, but it will also make for incredible celebratory images when a government is finally elected and the streets will suddenly be full of suddenly smooth Belgians moving fast through the air due to a complete lack of wind resistance.
Yeah, just crashing into all the waffle shops.
Oh, God. Thank you, Benoit Waffle. Yep.
I mean, hopefully also the politicians will spring into action, because just for too long since the election, they've just been, you know, waffling on, not really getting anything done.
I really think more countries should vote through the use of facial hair as well. I'd like to see everyone in the UK wearing a handlebar moustache until our national debt has been paid off. That'll grab the world's attention and foster a sense of solidarity.
Well, it worked in the 19th century, didn't it?
Yes, yep. It did.
I mean, literally everyone had a handlebar moustache.
Yes.
And everything was fine.
Yep, people started shaving.
Point proved.
And colonies started dropping like flies.
That's right, yeah. Well, I mean, what more proof? Of course, you know, I mean, as a Belgian, growing a beard is not really a major gesture. I mean, stopping eating waffles would surely be a much, much more potent sign to the government.
Can't be done. You're asking too much, aren't you? Yeah.
Well, I guess, I mean, in a way, you get both, because presumably quite a lot of waffle will get stuck in the beards. So, in a way, they are, you know, slightly cutting down on waffle intake.
Do something else, Belgium! Your move!
Do you know if you photograph Belgium from space, it looks like a waffle? Children's entertainment news now. And the children's entertainer, the amazing Hattie Hedgehog, has attracted criticism from parents of her young fans. For her new show, in which she eats a live frog, simulates copulation with a male hedgehog, graphically gives birth to a litter of 5 baby hedgehogs, 2 of whom she then kills, before herself being killed and eaten by an owl. Hattie, real name Henrietta Hedgehogstein, defended her actions, saying, "It's about time these children learn that sex and death are fundamentals not just of human life, but of hedgehog life too. More so, if anything. I'm f***ing sick of these idealistically naive 4-year-olds thinking all animals are cute and live happily ever after. They f***ing don't. Most of them don't even have a concept of happiness. They just eat, hump, and die. End of story." Parents of the tearful birthday girl, Wapeta Strave, complained that Hattie Hedgehog, quotes, had not been hired to do a wildlife documentary, and accused the 5-time Woodland Creature of the Year Award nominee of a lack of realism. Marcel Strave said, "Whilst I accept that sex and death are indeed an unavoidable part of a hedgehogotic life, I question the need for it to dominate a children's birthday show to this extent. I also question whether the sex was authentic. I myself have never before seen a hedgehog in the wild wearing skimpy lingerie and gyrating around a pole. And I also believe it is unusual that... I also believe it is usually male hedgehogs who kill unwanted baby hedgehogs. I understand that Hattie is a one-person act, so I may have taken artistic license on those grounds. But would a hedgehog really chain its children to a radiator before drugging them and hacking them to death with a chainsaw while shouting, 'Die, shithead, die,' in a bad Portuguese accent? I doubt it. I doubt it very much." Hattie the Hedgehog admitted she had been, quotes, "struggling creatively after exhausting all possible songwriting options for words rhyming with spiky." And she also denied reports that she is to be Kate Middleton's bridesmaid at the royal wedding in April, saying that it was mere coincidence that her and Middleton had both been seen wearing hedgehog costumes in the same park. Bugle feature section now, and wizards! It's about time we address this one, John. I've been skirting around it too long. And in Dubai, any story that begins in Dubai, you know it's got something for everyone. A court has given a 3-year jail sentence to a wizard who claimed he could make millions of dollars rain down from the sky in exchange for just a modest payment to some genies.
were the genies his accountants?
I think possibly. I mean, to be honest, this is basically what investment bankers do, and they get away with it scot-free. Or if he'd just taken his pointy hat off and put on a smart suit, come to London and said the same thing, he wouldn't have got a jail sentence, he'd have got a knighthood and behind-the-scenes influence with the cabinet.
But that is absolutely true.
Different cultures, I guess, John, different cultures. But this happened last year. He asked for a payment of 200 dirhams, which is around $50, to make the sky rain down. $25 million. And whatever you say about the guy, he charges a modest commission. That is around 0.0002% that he's taking.
Wow.
I think he can afford to bump it up. Most people charge at least 10%, probably 15%. And if he can do it, if he can make the $25 million rain from the sky, he will have earned his money. Maybe this is a one-man protest against the culture of excessive bonuses in top-level finance. He's saying to the bankers, look at me, I can make $25 million rain down out of thin air, and all I ask for is the price of a George Foreman grill. Surely making money appear from nowhere is a reward in itself, you selfish dogs.
Although just raining money, Andy, it's such a short-sighted economic strategy from that wizard.
Yeah.
Now, he's not factoring in inflation at all there. Unless he can make the money disappear somewhere else, then he's devaluing the money that he's raining down.
That's the worst kind of quantitative easing. It's
also
all, it's all done by wizards. I mean, their governments say, well, just, you know, it's quantitative easing. Yeah. In fact, it's just a guy in a pointy hat with a magic stick in the Bank of England.
I really think the chairman of the Federal Reserve in America should just be called Head Wizard. It would make as much sense.
Have you ever seen Alan Greenspan at weekends, John? I'm just saying he dresses differently.
No justice, though, Andy. Yeah. No justice for that wizard. He should have been given an opportunity in court to make millions of dollars rain from the sky. Without that opportunity, this should clearly immediately be declared a mistrial.
Wizard fact box now. Although wizards are often seen as wise old men, in fact they do have an average life expectancy of just 23 years. This is because 87% of wizards blow themselves up as children whilst trying to make sandwiches explode. Once they've harnessed their skills and survived childhood, they do then tend to live quite long. However, several wizards also die by falling into cement mixers. To a wizard, a cement mixer looks like a comfortable place for a snooze. 24% of all large concrete buildings around the world are thought to have at least one dead wizard buried somewhere in the foundations. The reason wizards' hats are pointy is because wizards are very road safety conscious and like always to have immediate access to a cone in case of an accident. Wizards and warlocks are not the same. Wizards think warlocks are self-aggrandising pricks, whilst warlocks think wizards are squares, nerds and wieners. The Washington Wizards baseball team are so known because when they were founded in 1934, the then owner, Scrabble Hound Junker Duke Jr., insisted that only very old men with long white beards played for the team. He said, they don't have to be wizards, they just have to look like them and play like them. After 10 seasons without a win, the requirement was dropped. Junker Duke explained, unfortunately, my players kept dying in their sleep or urinating on the court or forgetting who they were. And when they interpreted my request to play baseball like wizards as a request to sit in the middle of the court reading giant old books of spells and concocting potions, I realised I was onto a loser. Another wizard fact is that some people only found out they were wizards late in life. For example, when former US President William Taft was on his deathbed in 1930, he snapped his fingers to call for a nurse and unwittingly turned her into a pig. Repeated attempts to snap his fingers and turn her back into a nurse failed, and Taft consequently died. Mourners at his funeral roasted and ate the nurse pig in tribute. And the snooker player John Higgins is from the town of Wishaw in Scotland. He is known as the Wizard of Wishaw. However, he is not a real wizard. He's just good at snooker. There's no magic, just physics, excellent cue control, powers of concentration, and a master of a very narrow branch of practical physics, the collision of identically sized small solid spheres. His wife, however, is a witch. She dresses up frogs as snooker referees and boils them in cauldrons, and puts spells on John Higgins' opponents. You can sometimes hear her cackling in the background at top-level snooker tournements. And finally, if a wizard drinks 3 bottles of whiskey, he starts acting like a Your emails now, and this comes from Danny Scully in Washington Heights, New York City. What's that like, Washington Heights, John?
Nice.
Yeah?
Yeah, it's good.
Anyway, this comes from Danny in Washington Heights, who writes on the subject, London prison riot burns down new snooker tables. I don't think this was an anti-snooker riot. But anyway, dear Chris, John and Andy, in order of sexiness. God, I assume that is... No, I assume that is an ascending order.
Wow.
You're assuming descending order, surely more likely ascending order. Saving the winner till last. Surely it was clapping.
Yeah, that makes sense.
I'm sure you guys were already aware of this story since it happened January 1st, but since I hadn't heard you crack wise about it on the podcast, I figured I would email to see if I could engender discussion of it. The story I'm referring to is the recent riot at the Ford prison near Arundel in West Sussex, about which the chief of the prison said, staff have been chasing the prisoners around like Benny Hill. Which has to make it the funniest
slapping them on the head.
Incidental music to try and lighten the mood in a difficult situation like the Sudanese national anthem.
Yeah, maybe
they put
that's
the
it.
Benny Hill music maybe on that's it. As soon as there's a riot. Instead of having an alarm go off, Benny Hill
that's
music
actually a better. Good idea, isn't it? Yeah. The alarm is, in fact, the Benny Hill theme tune. And then instantly you'll just see the prisoners instinctively put on bikinis as they run around as well.
Anyway, it continues. I like pretty much everything about this story, but the facts I particularly wanted to bring to your attention were some prisoners are claiming guards let select prisoners go down to the the liquor shop to buy vodka on occasions. That's never going to turn out well for a prison. The fire resulting from the riot destroyed 10 brand new snooker tables.
Oof.
And these are the stories that...
Come on.
Just put everything in perspective.
Really. It wasn't the snooker table's fault. They were not involved. Yeah. Come on.
You think of all that. Slate gone to waste, and the
beautiful green slate.
There's little enough green bays in the world as it is. You know, the bays forests of Baluchistan have been terribly over-farmed for snooker tables. I'm going to go and burn down some brand new snooker tables. It's just a tragic waste.
The humanity. Yeah.
And also, the riot was brought about when guards attempted to breathalyze the inmates. Well, you have to ask, had the inmates been driving cars, and if so, why? I think this could be the future for riot control, Benny Hill music. He was a visionary, John. People thought he was just a man being silly and entertaining Greeks. But
he was about social reform.
That's right. And we've had another important piece of correspondence all the way from Australia. And
yes,
it's from
Chris. Do you want to explain this? Yeah.
So I met up with. Former producer Tom.
Yeah, former human being Tom.
Former human
God
being
rest
Tom.
His soul.
Who was, he joined me for a beer or two or three. Uh-huh. And after a few more beers on top of those beers, we decided to record you guys a message.
A
little hello. I warn you, good. It was recorded on quite a ropey mobile phone. And
okay.
And I, for one, wasn't in a fit state to drive heavy machinery at the time. So it's vaguely annoying.
Okay, that sounds good.
Okay, I'll play it.
That's how I like my greetings.
Hi guys, this is Chris, and I'm joined by Tom for hello. Hello, and we are currently in the southern hemisphere. How good is the southern hemisphere?
Well, let me just say, Chris. Currently, it's around 22 degrees. It's 7:30 at night, and summer's looking pretty good here. How's that snow going?
Yeah, and I've got to say, yeah, everyone here is having a lot of fun. They are having
a lot of fun. No one's caught up at an airport because of snow. Let me point that.
Oh. What are you doing on Boxing Day?
I'm going to the Test match cricket.
So am I!
With 90,000 other people to drink beer and watch the best sporting event in the history of cricket. Andy, how you feeling?
Have we got a message for the guys?
We have got a message in the spirit of communality. Let's do it on three. One, two, three. You!
I see Tom blending into the Australian life so seamlessly.
Yeah, well, did anyone, when you screamed together, "F*** you" into your mobile phone,
that's normal behaviour over there.
Yeah, I suppose
it just happens
it.
Up and down, yeah.
It's when you,
just
it's
part
when
of
you
the
don't,
wall of sound.
It's when you don't shout that into your mobile phone that people start getting worried about you.
I tell you what, women shout at men an awful lot over there.
Really?
One thing I really noticed is that women really, really lay into their fellas in public in a way that I've not seen anywhere else in the world, yeah. It's brilliant.
Just kind of basic criticisms.
Yeah, yes, that's Dwayne! Dwayne! And then, like, normally followed by a get here now or go there now.
Just the helpful instructions.
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much for that message from the other side of the world, upside down. Yeah. Sport now! And a Brazilian football player has been charged for falsely claiming that he'd been kidnapped as an excuse for running late for training. So basically, this football player claims that he'd been abducted at gunpoint at 7 in the morning on the way to the training ground, something which, you know, can happen in Brazil. But police said that CCTV footage from his apartment showed him leaving late for work at 9 in the morning. It's a pretty good excuse, Andy. I mean, you're going in big there.
Yeah.
Because you could say I was ill or, you know, a family member was sick. But to go in with I was kidnapped, really necessitating immediate police response, was probably overshooting a little bit. I was kidnapped and beaten unconscious, and I just woke up. But then I was so determined to get to training that I have got here just 2 hours late. So let's no, don't get the police involved. I'm just here to train.
Well, this is all part of the culture of lying and of deceit in football. You know, it starts with penalty box diving, and then all of a sudden you're pretending you've been kidnapped when there's absolutely no contact at all.
You're right. It's basically a gateway drug diving. Yeah. And all of a sudden you're claiming you've been kidnapped.
The problem is, you know, if enough footballers start doing this, then sooner or later people they are actually going to get kidnapped, and the refs aren't going to believe them.
Yeah, you're right. You're right, but now I suppose let's just hope it doesn't get onto the field, though. Let's hope player dives in the box, suddenly claims he's been kidnapped, and waves an imaginary yellow card in the air.
Well, I know Formula One are bringing in race carjackings from next season to spice up the racing. I think each team is going to be allowed to attempt to carjack one opponent during the race. It's going to be tactically fascinating.
Yeah, it really is. It's going to really liven up pit stops as well.
I mean, that's when you're most vulnerable, of course.
It really is. Yeah. I wonder if they're going to allow drivers to carry handguns inside the cars in that case.
I mean, it'll make it a much more interesting sport, John. Whatever you say, I know the purists don't like it. But, you know, it's got a big audience, and, you know, audiences are fickle these days. And I just think, you know, armed carjackings are the way forward. I mean, you know, Formula One, it used to be regular deaths in Formula One. That's, you know, throughout the 60s and 70s. You know, they often have fatal crashes. You don't get that anymore, and they need to replace it with something else that gives the audience that visceral thrill.
Rubens Barrichello coming in for his final pit stop. He's two laps there. Oh, no! Oh, no! Oh, no! Juan Pablo Montoya is leading Rubens Barrichello to the side of the track and telling him to kneel on the ground.
We're all in favour of car safety, but, you know, we need excitement as well. Also, they could afford the best hostage negotiators, you know, with all the money in Formula One. You'd expect most of these issues to be resolved.
That'd be part of a pit team as well. They managed to successfully negotiate that hostage release in 8.6 seconds. That's pretty good.
You just have to hope they don't leave the pits with the hostage negotiator still attached to the car. Anyway, that's it for the Bugle this week.
That's it.
Yep.
Bugle done.
Yep. That is toasted and boasted.
What does that mean? I know, right, Andy? Doesn't feel enough in that circumstance.
No. No, I began that phrase without really knowing how it was going to end.
Oh, well. So, you got there in the end.
It's like the Gettysburg Address. That's how that...
Very much like that. Now, what starts in a harmless riff ends up in an unexpected call for unity. 4 score and 7 years. Oh boy, I'm talking faster than I'm thinking here.
So that's it, Buglers.
That's it. That is it. That's 140 down.
We will speak at you again next week. 140. 140.